Hi everyone, I'm Ian, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here. Not so grateful to be as hot as I am, but I'm grateful to be sober and sitting here. And I just want to say that, you know, by the grace of God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which has led me to my path to my higher power, God, I do sit here sober, recovered alcoholic right here, right in the now. And I was kind of meditating on, you know, I just spoke about a couple weeks ago down in Barnegat and did my story, and I was thinking, you know, as I was sitting, like, you know, what's going to come through, and getting quiet and getting into meditation, and I realized I keep following Peter, and from packed houses to partially packed houses. Maybe that would have bothered me a while ago, but I'm okay with it today. He's a good friend. And one of the things, what I really felt like talking about today, and I'll carry some of my qualifications as an alcoholic into it, is not so much my story, but, you know, we talk about, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and, you know, I really want to talk a little bit about what happened, you know, my working of the 12 steps and what it's like now, you know, living in these promises of recovery. And for that, I'm really grateful. So, you know, one of the things I figured I'd do a little bit out of the book and carry some stuff into it. And I'll probably go along with Dave's solo group conscience to cut this meeting a little bit short in this heat and not carry it to 9:15. One of the things I really wanted to, that just struck me when I was, you know, every day I wake up and part of my daily routine when I get up is I like to just read the book a little bit. You know, I wake up, I thank God for keeping me sober and for the gifts and blessings in my life and do a little meditation. And I kind of just rumble through the book and just grab a page or two and I read it. And today, I opened just to the foreword, one of the original forewords, I guess, and this sentence that was just amazing. You know, it talked about that we can have permanent recovery. You know, and I was thinking about permanent recovery, like, you know, that doesn't buy well in a lot of the places when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. If the group topic for the day was someone had something to share and wanted to bring it to the table, you know, I wasn't raising my hands and saying, I have permanent recovery. You know, just wasn't something I even heard of. I didn't know it was possible. I thought that we just didn't drink. I'd never been through the work. And as part of that, I want to share something that was shared in my... And by the way, I'm a little racy today, but so I may jump and jump back, but... I want to just say that I have a home group. It's a Vision for You in Union, New Jersey. We meet Thursday nights at 7:30 to 8:45, and I'm grateful for that group, and I love my home group. I didn't know what a home group really was until I became a member of that group a couple years back. And, you know, that group's about doing the deal, and it's brought me to the ability to be able to sit here in front of you here and talk about recovery. And if anybody ever is in the neighborhood, I know a lot of you guys come down. Just a wonderful group. And it probably formed way back when out of the basis of this group, because this Bernardsville group, it feels like the mecca of recovery in the New Jersey area. Like, the real, no disrespect to any other group, but for me, it all started in Bernardsville and then spread out. Yeah, lost my train of thought for a second. So, I had come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I was really getting at was, to get back to track a second, was that someone had come and spoke in my home group the other day and talked about the most important person in the room. And, you know, for years I'd always heard, and I still believe that the most important person in the room is the newcomer, the person's first time in a meeting. But this gentleman shared something that really struck home. Sometimes the most important person in the room is someone with 5, 10, 15, 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous and dying of untreated alcoholism and never being brought the solution, never having the opportunity to go through the work with the teacher and, you know, have a spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps. Now, on my way over here today, I stopped at the Dairy Queen, and I was like obsessing over this chocolate-dipped ice cream cone. It was like a little spiritual experience, you know? But it wasn't a spiritual awakening as a result of this, you know, working these 12 steps. And when I had found my own teacher for this process, I'd been through speaking to a lot of people. I had a couple sponsors along the way, and I heard someone speak once in a kind of a convention-like setting, and I went up to him and after the meeting or the talk, and I asked him, you know, I really am in dire need of a real sponsor, somebody, you know, I've been through the book, I've read the book, I know the difference between a moderate drinker, a hard drinker, and a real alcoholic, and I, you know, can classify myself as a real alcoholic. But I've had a hard time finding people that could really carry the message in this book as it talks of depth and weight. And I needed to seek and find it, and I did. And he said, you know, there's nothing wrong with asking a gentleman, or if you're a woman, another woman, have they had a spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps? Not a spiritual experience from not drinking one day at a time or making some extra money and living on some externals, but some real internal work. And you know, God put that teacher in my life, and for that I'm grateful. And he's a member of this group. It usually comes on Saturdays, I believe. So one of the things I really I wanted to just kind of talk about were some of the promises in the book and where they're working currently. And you know what? I want to say that I went through the work, and the first three steps for me, I never had the real experience until later on. I totally identified, you know, I thought I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous in the beginning because people told me I did. And I went along with that for a long time. You know, I was in an outpatient rehabilitation center, and you know, they told me I was alcoholic. Family members told me I was alcoholic. Some friends told me I was alcoholic, and you know, I wanted to believe it, but deep in my innermost self, I didn't admit to my innermost self I was alcoholic. But I carried that around for a while. Hey, Scott, good to see you. And you know, when I was brought through the work, and was explained the phenomenon of craving, I really identified and realized I was alcoholic, and what it meant to have the phenomenon of craving coupled with the obsession and the spiritual malady. And you know, I was brought to come to believe, you know, that a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. And I didn't understand the sanity. I was taught that the sanity was the thinking that preceded the first drink. And, you know, that I could do it different this time, that I wouldn't get in trouble, that, you know, I'll only have one. And, you know, all the insane stuff that this book describes with the jaywalker, with Bill, with the car salesman, with Fred and all that. And I went back through the third step a few times. I had done a third step prayer. I'd read the third step. I didn't really understand what I was doing. I was asked if I was willing to go forward with the rest of the work, and I did. I said I would, and I did, and I got the right inventory, have a fifth step with another man, which was very freeing, and went through 6 and 7, had an eighth step list and made amends. And during that time, I was taught to start living in 10, 11, and 12. And I didn't understand really 10, 11, and 12. I just thought, you know, the 10 step just meant that at night I just went over what I did in my head. And if I owed someone an apology, I thought about doing it, you know. But I learned about 10, 11, and then I really learned about 12 and, you know, how to carry the message and how to work with other men and how to be of service and how to live on all three sides of the triangle. And then after I'd been doing that and I took some men through this work and, you know, coming back, I really had my first, second, and third step true experiences where I really came to believe, because I saw it, I was a witness to it, and where I realized that living, you know, contingent upon my spiritual being and state of mind and acting in God's will, I was recovered a day at a time, and, you know, and had not wanted to drink ever again. And so, you know, as I went back and I took my first person through the work and really, you know, went through the ABCs and, you know, really looked at, you know, that I was alcoholic and I couldn't manage my own life, you know, drunk or sober, that no human power could relieve my alcoholism. You know, it was then that I could really grasp that, you know, no human power was going to relieve my alcoholism. No wife, no kids, no meetings, no sponsor, no human power. That it was going to be a relationship with me and my higher power, or else I was doomed to live an alcoholic life. And really, for me to live an alcoholic life, untreated, drunk or sober, is a life of misery. It's a life of, you know, page 52, and, you know, where I have no personal relationships, and I, you know, where I can't make a living, and not financial living, a living of being of service and being a, you know, a man. I didn't understand all this stuff and the uselessness and the self-pity and the anxiety and the stuff that gripped me my entire life. And that was part of the alcoholism. It wasn't just the drinking. And it took me a long time to realize that, you know, when I removed the alcohol from Ian, I still had alcoholism, untreated. And I didn't quite understand it. And I knew it wasn't until I sat at some point in my recovery, I'll call my abstinence of drinking, where I knew the drink would kill me, but I had no other solution. And I sat and I shook and I was in agony and pain and was potentially willing to kill myself sober because I just didn't know what else to do. By the grace of God, that didn't happen. And, you know, you know, I learned that, you know, without enough pain, nothing seems, at least for me, I need to be in extreme pain to make the change, to be able to accept that I need help, to be able to, you know, raise the white flag and really surrender. And, you know, and see that God could and would if he were sought. And, you know, as I went back, you know, through the work and just to clarify something, I'm of the school, and it's just for me, that I'm constantly going through the work. I don't go through the steps and then stop and then, you know, live on a spiritual experience that I had 6 months ago or 8 months ago or 2 years ago. I try and live on a spiritual experience that I had today, right here, right now, and I'm constantly trying to improve on that. And we have these third step promises that talk about, you know, when I have a new employer, when God is my director, my father, we have this arch, you know, that we can walk through, this freedom. And I didn't understand it. And when I had said earlier that I'd never had this third step experience until later on, I didn't really understand it until I came back and started going back through again, because I saw that, I feel that arch. I know when I can walk through. And it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, but I still had to show up for work. You know, I couldn't just say, okay, you know, I have God in my life now and it's all good. It's not. I've got to continue to be of service to Him and to my fellow man. That being all powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs, and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. That was not what I was made of. I was not a person that wanted to see what I can contribute to life. I was built on the philosophy of what's mine's mine, what's yours is mine if I can get it, and selfish and self-centeredness was deeper than the root of my problem. You know, it was like, you know, there's roots, there's weeping willow trees, and then there's oak trees. You know, and the weeping willow tree's got the roots on the surface, and the oak tree goes down deep, and, you know, it's hardwood. I was hardwood. You know, but I didn't see it until later on. You know, it says, when we felt the new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of His presence. We begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the thereafter, hereafter. We were reborn. Okay, why? I did not understand that until I had gone through this work and was okay with Ian. You know, it took a long time for me to be okay with Ian. Not filled with anxiety that I'm sitting up in this chair right now and I'm sharing in front of you, and what are you going to think of me, and what if I didn't deliver him? It's okay. You know what? I'm okay with Ian. And I say that not out of a position of like ego built. I say it out of a true sense of where I am right now and right here. And I don't live in an environment where filled with fear. You know, that I could face life successfully. You know, in the fifth step, and I'm gonna, you know, I just want to share some of these promises. You know, that we can look. You know, once I completed inventory and sat down with my sponsor and, you know, went through everything that I had done, I never realized how much fear I lived in and how my entire being was based on fear. It says that, you know, we could look the world in the eye. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. I ran from everybody. I ran, I isolated, and I hid. You know, it took me a long time to realize why I needed to get drunk before I went out anywhere with my wife. You know, we would go to a party, we would go to dinner, we'd go to family events. It didn't matter where I was going to coach a soccer game. I needed that sense of ease and comfort that came from that first drink to be able to look the world in the eye. You know, people say alcohol did for them what they couldn't do for themselves. I buy into that because I knew that, you know, Saturday night was coming around and, you know, I probably had a few cocktails through the day without question, but, you know, they were concealed and hidden. And then I'd be going to get ready to go out to dinner, get in the shower, and I'd have a big cocktail to get in the shower. And then when I got out, I'd have a bigger one. And my wife would get really upset. And Bill Story would talk about, you know, how his drinking started to bother his wife. It was one of the first things I identified. My drinking bothered my wife before I got married. And 20 years later, it continued to bother her to degrees way more than that. But it was because I had to drink. You know, I didn't have a choice. I couldn't face the world in the eye. I couldn't go to I couldn't go to this party or to this dinner or to a Broadway show or anywhere without feeling good, without having that little bit of ease and comfort, which unfortunately, as my progression in alcoholism soared, it became, I was gone before I got out of the shower, and then I never went, and my wife had to make excuses constantly of where I was and why I wasn't there. It was part of some amends that was very difficult to make. Hey, Jess. Embarrass her, but this is one of my favorite persons in right there. We're a day apart, and we came in a day apart. So, so some of these promises that come true, we're constantly hearing of, the ninth step promises that are read in the meeting, but there's so much other promises, for me to be able to look the world in the eye was just a whole new power that I didn't have, to be able to show up to stuff and not be drunk, or have to be able to live life without alcohol was a real, a miracle. To live without alcohol was a miracle. So, I jump through here and pop back 1 second. I mean, usually I get a couple ideas and, some of the other fifth step promises besides look the, the world in the eye. I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. The fears fall from us. We began to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. It's starting for me at that point. Feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Sometimes people go through this, and I believe this is, this is where, from my system, this isn't a, a lot of hard drinkers have these experiences, and they, the craving was lifted, that the obsession was lifted. You really want to feel that, and you go through a fourth step, write inventory, and share it with the sponsor. I felt that, it was more than lifted. I started to feel like at that point I was levitating. All this stuff had come out that I had pushed and pushed down, and I let it go, and I really felt, these feelings. I felt like it was just, it's hard to say. I just felt like, that I was moving forward and I didn't want to stop. Like I got to that point in the fifth step and I just felt like, 40 years of all this stuff bottled inside of me and was just ejected out of me. And I just felt like I had this feeling of, just wanting to move forward and just wanting to keep going and wanting to share this stuff, and to talk about the experiences. And God blessed me with a lot of recovered people in my life that on a daily basis, sponsees and other men, to be able to share this. It's just a wonderful thing if it hasn't been experienced, I went through, I really hit a roadblock in the ninth step. I really had some amends. I was willing to make amends until I had to make those amends. And then I wasn't so willing. And I sat on a couple of them for a long time. And then I started feeling, all this anxiety building up again, and I started feeling the old feelings coming back. And I got on the phone with Chris one day and said to Chris, I don't know what it is. I'm anxious. I had panic attacks and stuff. And the first thing he said to me was, how current are you with your amends? And said, not so current. And he said, well, why don't you get current and see how that feels? And I needed, you know, I had to go. I almost went back. I got my sponsor. I wasn't being honest with him at the time. I was telling him I was trying to make some amends, but deep inside I wasn't. And then I called him up one day and I said, I'm roadblocked on these amends. And we went right back to the first step all over again. And I had learned that when I have an 8-step problem, a 9-step problem, a 6-step problem, a 4-step problem, it's all for me a 1-step problem. You know, it's my, you know, I need to realize that without doing the rest of these steps, I'm going right back to the first step. And, you know, the first step for me means I'm drinking. You know, if I'm working the first step, it means you can pull me right off the bar. That's working the first step for Ian. So, you know, I finally got through with a lot of the amends. Facebook was a big help, and some of the other stuff that goes on, and it helped. And, you know, I still have one or two amends, but I'm willing to make them. And when God puts the right time and place, you know, I feel like I'm in the position to make them. And, you know, I'm going to skip right across the 9-step promises, except I just want to say that, you know, one of the biggest 9-step promises for me is fear of people. You know, and it all goes back to all the other promises that we're going, you know, can't look, you know, I can look the world in the eye and, you know, this stuff goes away. I don't have, you know, fear of people for me steps back, and I was talking with someone just before the meeting. If my problems are of my own making, as the book says, then I've caused the problem, and then I have reason to be fearful of something because I have a problem. If I make a problem and I go ahead and take care of it right away and make an amends, I don't have a problem. I shouldn't have a problem looking at somebody and talking to somebody. I shouldn't have to run and hide and duck. One time, you know, this is going, is this posting, Jonathan's posting this on the internet? Well, I'll give the abridged version then, in case it comes back to haunt me down the road. But my wife threw a surprise party for me for my 40th birthday, which was 7 years ago. It was supposed to be a surprise party, but one of my other drunk friends spilled the guts, you know, the beans to me. And I caught wind of some of the people she invited, and I flipped out. You know, I'm like, they can't come to my, you know, I owed them either money or I did something. And now they were coming to my party because they've been looking for me for years. You know, and I went berserk. I'm like, you know, here's my wife making this party for me, planning this whole thing, golf, dinner, the whole bit. And I ruined it for her, you know. And why? Because I was fearful of seeing two or three people there, and then I had two or three other people. I didn't want them to see each other for stuff that I did in between the two of them. And they was going to get together, and the real truth was going to come out that it was Ian's fault that they hated each other. And that whole night was an absolute disaster. Why? Because I couldn't look the world in the eye. Because I didn't have, you know, who would have thought that all that stuff goes away with a simple book, a blue book, you know, that came post stopping drinking. You know, so that promise in those 9-step promises that we hear of fear of people, you know, I learned, and as I take other men through the book, the fear of people generally goes away when you just tell the truth, when you do the right thing, when you don't create problems of your own making. Now, that doesn't mean that there's going to be people that come into my life or anybody else's life. One of the the greatest things I had heard since I've been in recovery and really working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous was when I sat down in my fifth step with my sponsor, and he shared something with me of how he made amends to a gentleman that really harmed his family and was in jail. And he went to make amends because he needed to get free of that. And it took me a little while to understand it, but once I understood where he was talking about and getting that freedom, I realized, you know, what kind of life I can live. And, you know, if somebody could forgive somebody for doing something so bad, there's nothing's gone on in my life that I can't forgive somebody for me right now. And I learned some other stuff of, you know, of where my role and stuff that happened when I was a child that I had no control of. I was just a little kid. And I learned that, you know, by carrying that around and festering over all the years, how I damaged relationships with other people based on something that happened to me, and I had to get rid of that if I wanted to be free. When I talk to one of my friends, you know, almost on a daily basis, the first thing he always says to me when I call up, I said, "How are you doing?" And he says, "How are you?" He says he's free today. How am I? Am I free? And I always, you know, take that in. You know, right now I'm free. I'm, you know, I'm at peace and ease. I'm comfortable. I'm not agitated right now. But the real thing I wanted to lead up to is we read these at my home group, and they're some of my, you know, strongest promises in the book, the 10-step promises. And it starts with loving tolerance of others is our code. I was taught that, and I try and live to that. It says, "And we cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol." You know, I say to myself every day, have I? For this time, sanity will have returned. You know, do I really believe that, you know, I can drink today and it'll be different? You know, have I been restored to that sanity of the first drink? We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from a hot flame. Numerous times, and, you know, I got to a point in recovery that I realized that I'm coming into these rooms to live, not to die. And, you know, if I'm invited to a wedding or an affair or a cocktail party for work, I need to go. I need to show up. My motives are right. I need to be there and be a good example of what I'm supposed to be. Somebody brings a drink and says, "There's a drink for you." And no thanks. I don't need to go through a whole situation. I'm not, you know, I appreciate it, but no thanks. You know, I'm not powerless today over people, places, and things. You know, I have the power through my relationship with God to walk into a bar for the right reasons and be with friends that are having a bottle of wine for dinner and be okay with it. It says that we react sanely and normally and find that this happens automatically. It does. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I live my life feeling that way right now. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Here's another thing. Go into a middle-of-the-road meeting, open group discussion, and bring that second thing. Not only are you permanently recovered, but the problem's been removed. That doesn't go over too well, and probably because a lot of people have never been through the work. One time, I was asked to go to a meeting not far from here, and I was reading some stuff, you know, of these 10-step promises, and I saw, like, half the room looking at the window shade on the wall for the 10-step, trying to see where it says that in the 10-step. They had never read the book to go through the 10-step to see that these promises exist. It says that, you know, we're not cocky nor are we afraid. That's our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. One of my great things that I discuss a lot with my sponsor and the other men that I'm involved with, that, you know, it's easy to let up on this program. It's a huge warning and rest on our laurels. You know, we're heading for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. And you know, I just want to say that this is where I am, you know, today, that I'm not cured. I am, but I'm okay. You know, I'm living in a life of something that I've never had before. I'm living in this place of neutrality. Yesterday, you know, as I can just expand into some stuff that goes on in my, you know, daily life through recovery. Sunday, I had, about a week ago, my son plays golf and tournaments and stuff, and he said, "Dad, can I go try and qualify for this thing?" And I'm like, "Yeah, no problem. You know, I'm around over the next week or whatever. Just tell me when." So he goes, "All right, I signed up for it. It's 4th of July in Riverhead, Long Island." So right away, I'm like, 4th of July in Riverhead, Long Island? And I'm figuring in my mind, okay, that's 8 hours to get out there and 8 hours to get back. And then, you know, because right away I can project the traffic, the GW Bridge, all this other stuff. And I said, okay, I got a solution here. I'll go out Saturday night. We'll stay over and we'll come back Sunday. So I go online to try and find a place. And the only places that were available were like $400 or $500 a night. And they wanted a 3-night minimum, 4th of July weekend. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm not going to let this go crazy. We'll get up early. We'll drive out there. And it was fine. We drive out there. And then on the way out there, I'm like, what happens if he qualifies? I'm going to have to come back tomorrow. And, you know, I'm like, now I'm going to drive home, drive back. And, you know, and here comes those things. And I've got to remember, you know, so we get out there and I was speaking to someone and he had missed the qualifying. He was the first alternate. And I'm like, here's God doing for me what I can't do for myself. You know, and we're talking on the way back. And I get a call this morning that someone dropped out and he's the first alternate. And can I be out there at 11 o'clock this morning? Because he's supposed to tee off at 11:15. And it was 10 o'clock. And I said to the lady, you know, I was like, you know, thank you. I'm going to let him know. I'm sure he appreciates it. But shy of me renting a helicopter, I can't get to Riverhead, Long Island in 1 hour and 5 minutes. So, but the old Ian wouldn't have reacted like that. The old Ian would have been, you know, riding him to the ground on the way out there that I'm ruining my whole weekend. You know, the old Ian would have got out there and couldn't wait to get back. And, you know, coming back, it was, we're driving back and he's talking about, you know, how he, you know, we're not going to see the fireworks in our town. And I'm like, don't worry, we're going to see plenty of fireworks in the traffic on the way back on the LIE. And, you know, every two exits, we saw some other town's fireworks going. And, you know, then the Macy's Day Parade blocked the city for another couple hours. And but I was okay. You know, we got home real late at night, and he thanked me. And, you know, and then I thanked him. And I was like, you know, Alex, I want to tell you that I didn't really want to go in the beginning, and I'm really glad I did go. And, you know, all that comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, from what I learned in these rooms from all of you. And that's not what I was made of, but today that's what I have. And, you know, with that, I just want to say, what do we got? Do Dave Niffen and end this meeting a little early. And I want to thank you all for allowing me to speak. Thank you, Dave, for inviting me. And God bless you all.